Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry, Caroline Fenton, and for Chase McCabe. Joining us now is Mitch Light, college football writer for The Athletic. Mitch, first and foremost, I know that there are a lot of people that were a little bit upset about the way that Josh Heupel and this Tennessee offense ended the game against Missouri. They brought in the backups up what felt like 100-0, and then Joe Milton just bombs the ball downfield like a 60-yard pass, and they score to go up even more against Missouri. And I know that didn't sit very well with a lot of people at the top of the college football talking headspace. How did you feel about that? I personally think that that's Tennessee just riding their college football playoff resume, but in your opinion, was that bad on Josh Heupel?
Conflicted. I don't think it really matters. I mean, I think the committee members are smart enough to, if you're swayed by 7 points in an already blowout, then, you know, you got to reassess the way you look at teams, and I think they're smart enough to know when points were scored in garbage time. I'm typically of the, hey, it's the defense's job to stop the offense. That's usually when you've got a young quarterback in, maybe late in the game, and you want to get some throws in. Joe Milton isn't a young quarterback. Tennessee knows what he can do. So I guess I would err on the 51% to 49%. Would rather have seen them not do it, but I don't really care. But again, I don't think it will influence any decisions on any rankings.
And kind of sticking on the Tennessee theme here, good thing for Tennessee, Oregon losing to Washington. Bad for Tennessee, TCU ends up pulling out a win at Texas. College football playoff rankings come out tonight. Do you see Tennessee squeaking into that top four, or does TCU winning against Texas kind of leave Tennessee out of the conversation, at least for this week?
I don't see much changing. They claim they, you know, started fresh every week and don't look at the previous week's rankings, but it would be crazy to think that they thought TCU was number four last week and they go to Texas and win impressively. I mean, I know they don't look great offensively, but we know this is a good offensive team. It was a good defensive performance. So, you know, not much changes for Tennessee. For TCU right there, again, I'd be very surprised if any of the top four change.
Now, Mitch, looking at the top four or top five, let's just say, of this committee's voting last week, and we just assume that it may stay the same this week considering what has happened. Do you see it changing, period, until after, unless TCU loses? Then obviously it can change, but I can't see them losing no time soon, maybe not even until to the championship game. But you don't see this thing changing until the Michigan and Ohio State game, which is the last game of the season, because both teams have pretty much cakewalks. I think Michigan has Illinois, who's a top 25 team, but, I mean, Illinois is not playing. Exactly, they're struggling. They lost to Michigan State. They're struggling. Do you see this staying status quo for the next couple of weeks if we don't have any major upsets?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how you could, like you just said, Derek, Ohio State's going to win this week. Michigan's going to win this week. You know, I think Georgia's going to win this week. You know, I don't see there's really no rationale to change things up this week. You know, Tennessee won comfortably. I would expect they'll win again comfortably this week. So I think we're going to have to wait and see, you know, the Ohio State-Michigan game. It's not just two wins. It's two wins, and how do they look? What's the margin of victory and all that? That's going to be one of the most, you know, obviously when you got 2-3, but because they're in the same division and one of those teams is not going to win the division, that's going to be one of the most impactful games all season on the college football rankings.
Now, who do you think is potentially can be left out of this? Because even if, say, if TCU loses, say, in their championship game, they still only got one loss. So which team you think or division you think is left out ultimately?
I think the most likely scenario, and this is kind of assuming no chaos, which is not very smart when you're looking at stuff.
We love chaos.
I think the most likely scenario is the loser of Ohio State and Michigan will not make the playoff. I think TCU, I'm a believer now, I think they'll go make it through unscathed. So I think there's a very good chance it's going to be Georgia, the Big Ten champion, TCU, and Tennessee. So I think Tennessee's still a very good spot right now. Obviously, they'd love to control their own destiny a little bit more than they do. All they can do is go out and win their last two games convincingly. But I'm of the opinion that I can't see how the loser of the Ohio State-Michigan game has a better resume than Tennessee does, and that those two teams could be fighting for the final spot.
All right, Mitch, I am really surprised that Caroline did not ask the question that we asked you last week, because she is an LSU grad. She's wondering, though.
Uh-oh.
LSU, they were a little shaky, but they got it done. The question is, do we feel like it's any different this week? Because the real question is, if LSU is able to find a way to beat Georgia, hanging on, assuming they don't lose any more games, they've got two losses, but they're the SEC champ. What's their case to get in?
I put it this way. I'm glad I'm not on the committee. If I have to decide between a two-loss SEC champ versus a one-loss Tennessee team, when Tennessee – I mean, we all know the numbers. Tennessee went down there. They didn't just beat them. They beat them badly. But then LSU would have that win over Georgia on a neutral field. I'm not 100% willing, but I'm willing to look past – the LSU-Florida State game, to some degree, was the first week of the season. Obviously, LSU's improved a lot. The thing is just how many of those committee members, because we have to say this is 13 people voting. It's not just like this one person. So there's a lot of opinions in there. How much does a conference championship mean to those people? Some of it's going to mean a lot. Some of them going to mean it's just one more game, it's one more data point. You know, I don't think Bobby Johnson is on the committee anymore, the former, you know, obviously Vanderbilt coach, Willie, and I think you would agree with me. He was like an old school guy. He's like an old coach, I would say. You win a championship, that's hard. You know, I could see him being that type of guy that just values a championship over anything else. Then you might have an athletic director on there saying, oh, it's just one game, it's just one data point. So
I do think there'll be a lot of that human element. How much do you consider the league championship to be worth? Because you don't have to feel a certain way. They don't force you to feel a certain way.
Right. In that case, I would have to, you know, I'd like to see the Georgia-LSU game, although I don't really know what, like LSU beating Georgia, I don't think I need to see like how convincing the fact that they could beat them would be, you know, impressive. I would probably lean towards Tennessee in that scenario, but I could also see the argument for LSU.
Where is Florida right now? Vanderbilt got the big win. They're feeling good. I think that is a massive feather in Clark Lee's cap. We're going to talk to you at 1:30, but just to continue to feel like he can go out and sell the program and move forward, keep the guys he's got, go add another good recruiting class. But one more win, my goodness, that would be a game changer. So they've got Florida coming in. What are their chances?
Yeah, I mean, not great, I would think, but you feel a lot better about
that's pretty good
this week after.
I mean, consider where they've been, like, not great, but not zero. That's pretty good.
There was nothing fluke. The thing about, from a positive standpoint for Vanderbilt, other than the win, there was nothing fluky about the win. I mean, they outgained them. They outplayed them. They didn't give up many big plays except that Rodriguez big run. And I didn't know this until after the game, and I don't know the exact numbers, but evidently like 5 of Vanderbilt's top 10 offensive linemen were out. They really had a makeshift offensive line, so give them credit there. Florida has been a very weird team. The South Carolina game was a little fluky. I didn't see it. I know the details. I mean, I think South Carolina turned it over quickly, and it was 21-0 right off the bat there. You know, Florida's got – they don't have a ton of weapons, offensive weapons. It's just a average Florida team by Florida standards, or maybe a little below average. So, I mean, obviously Florida's favorite. I would pick them to win the game. Wouldn't stun me if Vanderbilt came out and played well in, you know, I guess I'd be surprised if they won, but you know, I think the confidence level that you just mentioned in from last week to this week is very important. I'm interested to see what happens at the quarterback position. I think the depth chart was just released, and it was an or with AJ Swan. Mike Wright obviously gives them a lot of things offensively that AJ Swan doesn't. Swan throws the ball down the field better there, so. I think no doubt Swan is the quarterback of the future, but I'd be very interested to see what they did this week. Even if Swan is able to play, would they still go with Mike Wright based on his performance from last week?
Yeah, he came through big. Okay, last one for you. Mitch, I know you work very closely with Ari Wasserman at The Athletic.
Too closely. But
the question that's being asked in his mailbag that, of course, is it obviously will get a big reaction. With Texas struggling some, you know, by their standards, it hasn't had a breakthrough. They lost to TCU. That would have been a big one for them. The question is, could it be possible that Arch Manning would reopen his recruiting?
No.
And you say no.
No. Yeah, I mean, he's already committed to early enroll. I mean, that doesn't prevent him from decommitting and – in signing with someone in December. But, as Ari pointed out there, I don't think any recruit has ever been more diligent with his decision, with decision-making based on the people, the football people he has around him with his dad, his uncles, and his grandfather. Like, he didn't make this decision based going and saying, okay, Texas needs to go 9-3 else or I'm not going there. He watched that game. Quinn Ewers struggled. They had trouble throwing the ball down the field. So he's like, I'm going to go in there and play. So, I would never say never, Willie, but I would put Arch Manning being in Texas at 99.7% next year.
So that was a veteran tactic by you and Ari to put it in the headline, the mailbag. Could he? And then, of course, the answer is a decisive no when you actually
We're just asking the question, Willie,
Well, that's what I was doing, and I got a straight no from you.
Yeah, readers ask the question. Arch, as I've discovered, Arch Manning in headlines does very, very well. A lot of people like to click on Arch Manning. Arch has been very good for business. In fact, if he were to decommit, that would be the best thing for the Athletic's recruiting coverage, I'll tell you that.
That would be very good.
I was just about to say, anytime you can get the word Manning in a headline, I'm sure you take the opportunity. Mitch Light, senior editor, college football for the Athletic. Appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, thanks. Mitch Light, The Athletic, he is the best. We'll follow his coverage of the college football playoff rankings coming out tonight, and that's what I want to get it to coming up next. How can we see some shakeup, or maybe not at all, in the college football playoff rankings tonight? We'll get into that coming up next. But it is Preds Game Day, brought to you by Social Furniture. Shop today during their Black Friday sale for a limited time and take an extra 20% off. Finance interest free at Social Furniture in West Nashville. Shop local, shop social.
Tennessee needs to worry about getting into the playoff because of TCU and USC. Low-hanging fruit or truth?
Truth. I think Tennessee is in a position where they could definitely get to the college football playoff, but I don't think they would get in over the likes of a one-loss USC Pac-12 champion and or a one- or zero-loss TCU Big 12 champion. You're going to say, well, Tennessee, they might beat they'd be favored on a neutral site against both those teams. That's fine. That's great. I still don't think I feel very good about trusting the committee enough to, keep a one-loss runner-up in division in over the likes of a Power 5 conference champion. Like, I don't see it happening. I know a lot of people have suggested, well, Tennessee's in no matter what. They're in great shape, especially as Michigan falls out. They lose to Ohio State or vice versa, and they're in great shape. Yeah, and for the time being, until you get to that 13th data point and somebody goes out and plays really well, next thing you know, they're knocking on the door to a college football playoff invitation as well. So I think there's a lot to look at when it comes to Tennessee, but no, I do not think they're a shoo-in at the moment by any stretch of the imagination.
There you go. That was Greg McElroy on Tennessee's playoff hopes. But hey, I'm going to give away tickets for your chance to see two top 20 teams. So stick around to the end of the segment, and we'll give those tickets away, and I'll give you your opportunity to win those tickets. But college football playoff rankings coming out tonight, and where it currently stands, Georgia 1, Ohio State 2, Michigan 3, TCU 4, Tennessee 5, Oregon 6. Now, Oregon lost to Washington this past weekend. Oregon will probably drop down to, mid-teens, 20s.
Irrelevant.
Out of the conversation.
Yeah.
Out of the conversation. LSU sitting at 6, now at 8-2, or 7 rather, now at 8-2. But I wouldn't be surprised to see USC jump LSU into that 6 spot. And the point that Greg McElroy was making there was a lot of people feel like Tennessee sitting at number 5 with an Ohio State or a Michigan, probably one of those are going to have a loss. They're going to drop out of the top 4. Is Tennessee going to be that fourth team in with TCU beating Texas? But USC is in the conversation. And even that loser of the Ohio State-Michigan game, whichever team it will be, will still have a case to get into the top 4.
Well, I mean, if things stay status quo and say, obviously the winner between Ohio State and Michigan, if indeed they win the Big Ten championship, they're automatically in. Mm-hmm. I can't understand, or I wouldn't understand if they said, okay, you got UT sitting there. After Michigan has lost, you got Georgia, Ohio State, TCU, and either UT or USC, because before they play the Big 12 or the Pac-12 championship game, the committee would have already made their suggestions or made their, you know, suggestions on who should be where. Mm-hmm. The top four or five will be set prior to championship weekend. To me, if that is indeed the case, UT moves into the number four spot because you can't move USC up. Even if they beat, say they beat Notre Dame and UCLA,
mm-hmm.
they still got one loss.
Mm-hmm.
You still couldn't move them up above UT before their championship game. I just don't think you can do it because you both have one loss. UT's strength of schedule was much tougher.
And Tennessee's one loss is to the top team in the country.
Exactly. Their only loss was to Georgia. So I just can't see how, even if USC wins the Pac-12 championship, their resume is still not as good as UT's resume.
But that's subjective. Because, I mean, when it comes down to the rankings tonight, like, I don't think they're going to change. Oregon's going to fall out, but that doesn't make it a shift to the top four. It'll be Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, TCU, Tennessee. That's mm-hmm. what I mean, there's been nothing that has happened to make the committee change their mind, in my opinion. But when it comes down to the final rankings, mm-hmm. Tennessee will not be featured in a conference championship.
No.
If USC wins the Pac-12 and only has one loss, do they view a USC conference champion with one loss versus a Tennessee team who didn't win the division but also only has one loss but also has three top 25 wins, I believe, where the college football playoff rankings mm-hmm. stand right now? That's what they're going to have to compare, is a conference champion with maybe not as many top 25 wins mm-hmm. versus a non-divisional winner with three top 25 wins more than any other team in the country.
That's the one thing that we've been talking about for weeks now, is how much do they value the league champion. Now,
which also
USC,
brings LSU into the equation.
That's part of the LSU thing,
yeah.
too. And that LSU's got to do their job, mm-hmm. right? They've got to mm-hmm. win all those games and then put the resume on the table and say, okay, here we are. But USC, they've got to beat Notre Dame, mm-hmm. too, which is not a cupcake, right? That'll be a quote,
Notre
quality.
Notre Dame's gaining some steam.
They are. Mm-hmm. It'll be a quality win
uh-huh.
either way. It would have been nice for USC if Oregon had not stumbled mm-hmm. last week,
mm-hmm.
and that would have been a really exciting one loss versus one loss. Winner has got a great chance,
uh-huh.
right? So Oregon, that win would be a little bit, you know, dampered, I would say.
Weight.
It would have carried more weight if
yeah.
Oregon had kept winning. But a one-loss USC is going to bring a lot to the table there. And remember what I keep saying, politics.
Uh-huh.
The politics of having two or three SEC teams in there, that's why I think three is really, really tough to think.
Three
two
will not
they
happen.
Get every year, but if there's a way, like with what's coming in the coming years, mm-hmm. with the exodus, you know, I wonder how they view USC with them being sort of a lame duck team, how mm-hmm. the Pac-12 looks at it, how important it would be.
But my thing is, how has you – and see, we don't know this because we're on the eastern side of the U.S., and obviously SC is on the western side, so we don't get many of their games. Mm-hmm. We don't see many of their games. I wonder how they
unless
truly,
you're a night owl
yeah,
like Chase.
Exactly. Yeah.
Chase, you know, get
I'll
the late
stay
night
up
action.
Until 2 o'clock in the morning to watch Washington, Oregon State football.
But
give
how
it to
good
me.
How good does this USC team look? Or how
well,
good
they got a Heisman Trophy candidate at quarterback. Mm-hmm. That's
I understand that.
Yeah.
But in each one of their games, they have played – every game has been a close game basically with them. When you look at these other teams that are in the top – four, three, whatever. Let's just say Tennessee, Georgia. Not because Georgia has had some close
Georgia's
games.
Georgia's had some close games that shouldn't have been close.
Exactly. Let's say UT, Michigan, and I don't know, Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Ohio State has had some close games, they have their margin of winning has been greater, especially UT's. And UT has played stiffer competition. If I'm playing a tougher schedule and still beating teams by 21 points, something that has to say something about my program. It has to. And you're playing not even playing a tenth of what my schedule is based upon strength, and you're barely winning games. It's like, come on, like if it comes down to UT and SC. And SC won a championship game, I'm still picking UT.
But that just depends on the committee's value on a conference
yeah,
championship.
Yeah, you're right.
And this is what it is every year, really, mm-hmm. when you get down to it. I've seen them go one way. I've seen them go the other way.
Well, if they're consistent with one thing, they're inconsistent.
Yeah.
I mean, they could value a conference champion 1 year and then completely flip the next. But be caller 3 now to win tickets to see a matchup between two of the NCAA's top 20 ranked college hockey teams. The Northeastern University Huskies will take on the Western Michigan University Broncos at the Music City Hockey Classic at Bridgestone Arena on Friday, November 25th at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Coming up next, the man of the hour, one of the biggest wins in college football over this past weekend. Clark Lee will join us coming up next. Chase Willie D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. Teammates, 1025-1063. The Game. Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee joins us now. Clark, I'm sure you are probably one of the happiest men in Nashville, Tennessee, coming off of that big win over Kentucky over the weekend. What does that mean for you? What does that mean for this program? What was the feeling in the locker room after that win over Kentucky over the weekend?
Well, Michelle, you wouldn't have known it looking at the video of that interview after the game with all the tears being shed. Looked to me pretty sad. I'm just kidding. I obviously, my emotion was all joy and a sense of fulfillment for the players and the staff that have given so much here early in this build. And it's not always been easy. I mean, it's been hard, and we're doing hard things together and having fun doing it. But it just it felt so good to have a group of guys that I love and I care about, both our staff and our players. It felt so good for them to find that reward, and just to finally put together four quarters of football that gave us access to that reward. You know, when we play well, we're a good team, and it's about pulling that type of performance out consistently. We haven't been able to do that in conference, but on Saturday we did, and it was fun to celebrate with the guys afterwards.
Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee is with us, and celebrate you should have, but how have you viewed this week to kind of be able to celebrate, enjoy that win, and then shift gears and focus on Florida coming up this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously when you're in the rhythm of the season, that's easy to do. Just, you know, we paused for a moment this weekend and celebrated progress and the feeling of progress, and we were grateful for that opportunity, but our schedule allows us to quickly kind of put that beyond us. And, by Sunday evening as a staff, we were working on, the early parts of our game plan against Florida. And by Monday morning with the team, we had unpacked the game against Kentucky and had moved on to Florida. And, obviously the season didn't end on Saturday. There's a lot left for us to do. And this is a great opportunity for us as a program to take a good result, and by the time that we're with it on Monday together, to be able to look at it objectively and still be pleased with the result, but also to look at the places where, we need to strengthen our performance. And the good news for our team is there's still a higher level out there. We have a higher level performance in front of us. We have to do a better job of securing the football and playing penalty free and, downing the breakouts on the perimeter. And if we can do that against Florida, we can position ourselves to get a good result.
We're talking with Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Now, Coach, you had a lot of guys either sick or injured this past week prior to the Kentucky game, but yet and still you guys came out and you put together a good performance, good enough to beat Kentucky. What does that say for your program to have those guys not be able to practice as much during the week, but then inserting other guys in that Saturday and those guys stepping up and playing big?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm proud of the way that the strength of our team throughout, and I believe that we're a resilient group. I believe we've worked hard on that as part of our identity. There's a toughness here, and being able to have the next man up mentality and insert guys in and to find success that way speaks volumes about the quality of depth you have. It makes me happy. I've always felt like for us to sustain success here, we have to develop the depth of our roster. I think too often you've moved past there's too much of a gap between your one and your three, where your three never gets a chance to be out there and get worked. But we've done a nice job here of developing the roster throughout, and so the drop-off isn't as significant. And when you have a team that's playing together and playing as one and playing for each other, you can get all those guys to go really hard, and that a lot of times, you know, allows for the performance not to slip in the moment.
Now, you know how this works, Coach, especially during a game when things are not sort of going right, and then all of a sudden you get two or three, you know, plays that whether it be big plays or just consistent plays, and you start to see the confidence build in your team. And it either works for you or it works and it helps you win the game, or it works and helps you come back. This win against Kentucky had to have given your team a lot more confidence than they had prior.
Well, you know, the thing that I was really proud of was we never let bad moments snowball on us on Saturday. And what that means is the next unit on the field left the field better than they found it, whether it was the opening sequence where we went penalty turnover and then defense stepped on the field and got a three and out stop and held them to a field goal, to the offense taking the field there after the 72-yard touchdown run and counter-punching with a score of their own. And what happens is, you know, when you don't let bad things snowball, you're able to dictate the energy and dictate the terms on the field. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the offense's performance there at the finish allowed our defense to get back on the field and to actually finish the game, which I felt they did a great job of, just playing structured and playing hard and getting pressure on the quarterback and forcing a turnover. So that's maturity. That's advancement for us. Mm-hmm. Those moments for us this season have ended up in kind of like some really poor sequences where, you know, we'll lose 21 points in a matter of, you know, three back-to-back sequences. And it's hard to overcome those, particularly in this conference. The fact that we never had to do that, I really felt like gave us what we needed to finish that game off.
Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head coach, is with us. And, Clark, I was so happy for Mike Wright. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, from the time he's been there, you always see him supporting his peers, not only at the football games, but at the baseball games, at the basketball games. He's always there. He's a great team guy. And I've seen so many people in college football, maybe they lose their starting spot, and then the next thing you know, they're in the transfer portal or they're saying something bad. He hangs in there and he plays maybe his best game. Some of those throws he made at the end, just in the clutch, I think about how much work that had to be for him behind the scenes when he could have taken it a different way.
Oh, it's such a neat story, and I think it's just such an uncommon one anymore, where you have someone who cares so deeply about what we're building, and obviously, you know, he wants to be the guy and he wants to lead the offense, and he should. I want for him to want that. You know, he's at a season where it's been highs and lows, and, you know, he's dealt with his disappointment honorably. He's been a great teammate. He's been a captain for us. And, you know, when he's been called upon in relief duty, he's done a nice job. And I was so happy for him to get a chance to be the guy again on Saturday. And obviously, just overjoyed that he was able to lead our team to victory. And it's not a surprise. I mean, you know, anyone who's spent time at Mike, he's got such a energy about him, a passion, and he loves to play. You know, that guy loves to play football, and so it's infectious. And I definitely think that his play, his performance, his energy made a difference for us on Saturday.
And it's nice to have. I know in a situation now where injuries are piling up, and you're in your second year, you're trying to build the roster, but you've got AJ Swan now back on the depth chart. It's nice to have a little competition between two guys that have had some really good moments this year.
That's right, and both of whom have led us to wins and played winning football, and they really complement each other, and they help each other. I think that's a great sign too. One of the challenges I had for that quarterback room coming out of year one is it's time to put the team ahead of the competition in the room. You know, we're not competing against each other. We're competing with each other to build a program. And they've really taken that to heart. And I've seen a brotherhood form in that room, and they cheer for each other. They help each other. You know, certainly Mike's response to his disappointment has been a big part of setting that culture. You know, and AJ doing the same here as he's been out as well.
All right, Clark, before we let you go, I'm going to hit you with a fun story here. And after the game was over, I was celebrating in the household for the victory here. And my wife comes in. She has been working with a woman that was a huge mentor for her, Beth O'Shea, who she worked with for a long time, who taught you in the Encore program way, way back when. And Beth is going through some cancer treatments right now, so she's fighting. My wife's there. She thinks the world of Beth. And I know Beth thinks the world of you. She was so happy for you during that, and she was telling stories about you in the Encore program, how classy you were. And so she's so happy that you've done what you've done.
Willie, where do I send the check for this little character plug that you've given me? My wife, if she's listening to this, she may call in next and say, there's no way this guy was in the Encore program. Hey, listen, you have to give Beth a hug for me. That's what a sweet story, and I'm glad to hear that she's battling, and certainly she'll be in my thoughts. But dang, I appreciate you sharing that, man. It means a lot. At one point in my life, I was in the Encore program, and I was a class act in it too, huh?
There you go. It's recorded. I got the witness. I got it.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Clark Lee, we appreciate you joining us. Good luck this week against Florida.
Thanks, guys. Y'all take care.
Yep.
All right, Preds fans, don't miss tomorrow night's 6 p.m. Smashville live show at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. See your Predators star players up close and personal, plus get autographs and pictures. Preds player guests tomorrow will be Ellie Tolvanen and Kevin Lankinen. Smashville Live is brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling.
Oh, a little finished double beer, barrel action
and,
right there.
Yeah, there you go. And the Little Harpeth Beer and Superbook Sports. But coming up next, what is plaguing this Titans offense? We'll get into that. But first, Willie wants to tell you about Loan Pronto.
I do. Let's talk Loan Pronto. Cool stuff there with Clark Lee. Let me tell you what Loan Pronto's got going. If you're out there and you're a homeowner and you've got a good mortgage rate right now and you want to lock that in, keep that locked in. You don't want to mess with that right now. But if you still need cash, what Loan Pronto's got going is the Express Equity Line of Credit Program. It's just what you need because you can keep your great mortgage rate. You don't have to do the full home refi, but you can close in 7 to 10 days and get a check, $50,000, whatever it is, up to 95% of your home's equity. And it'll only cost you for $50,000, around $300 a month. So you do the math, you take the check and you address the needs right now. Pay off those big loans right now. Credit card bills, car loans. You can start a home improvement project if that's what you're looking for. Loan Pronto is ready to help you. So even if you did a total refi recently or just bought your home, you can still tap the equity with this fast, easy program. Loan Pronto. Do it before the holidays get going. Call them, 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
125-1063, the game. Chase Willie, D-Mace, Caroline Fenton in for Chase McCabe. Hey, come out to the grand opening of the new Dunkin' location in Mount Juliet this Friday morning. Enjoy free stuff. Who doesn't love free stuff? Plus, while you're there, you can register to win Predators tickets as well. That's the new Dunkin' location at 2234 North Mount Juliet Road this Friday morning. So we're looking kind of at this Titans team, which really throughout this entire season has been carried so much so by the defense. You could even go back to last year. This Titans team was carried so much so by the defense. But I think it was really highlighted this past week. Jeffrey Simmons out. Bud Dupree out. Amani Hooker out. Christian Fulton out. You know, four of your biggest role players and key players on the defensive side of the ball. And you still end up getting six sacks on Russell Wilson and still limited the Denver Broncos to just 10 points. So we know for certain from top to bottom, this Titans defense is elite. This Titans defense is going to be a problem for any offense that it faces. But where the defense really has to pull up a whole bunch of weight on is the offensive side of the ball. The way that, you know, Ryan Tannehill averaging 150-ish yards, passing yards a game.
Ooh.
You know, receivers didn't record a single catch against the Kansas City Chiefs. I understand, you know, we got Malik Willis in there. The passing game is going to be have some sort of hitch thrown into it. But the Titans offense has its own issues. And whether that's personnel, whether that's, you know, you trade away A.J. Brown and you don't have a viable replacement for what they lost in the passing game, whether that's play calling, I think it all kind of comes to fruition into this. But it all comes down to me, the fact that the Titans just don't have enough talent. And the talent isn't being utilized offensively.
No, it's not. Whatever talent they do have, it doesn't show up consistently in a form of, you know, are you giving these guys opportunity to make plays in your offense? Are you designing things for them? It just doesn't show up on Sundays or Monday or a Thursday if they do play, which they do play this Thursday. It just hadn't shown up. And the defense can do only so much as they continue to move forward, because the more and more they play, the more and more they are susceptible to injuries. You saw what happened after, you know, that Kansas City game. All of a sudden, you got, you know, five guys that can't play in the next following game. That shows you how much strain the ineptness of the offense is putting on the defense. Mm-hmm. To whereas these guys are playing so much, they are, you know, getting injured because they're out there on the field so much.
I think that's maybe the biggest concern I have.
Yeah.
I think the complementary football is working. Because you don't need to score a lot because the defense is playing so well. But you got to get some more first downs.
Yeah.
You got to hold the ball a little bit more.
Drive.
Defense being on the field for 40 minutes.
That's too
unsustainable.
Much. Now, where it worked really well was the Houston game, because they churned up so much clock. They end up with only 17 points, but they had the ball the whole game. They put the defense in a great position, and the defense dominated a bad team. Mm-hmm. Now, what was the problem with Houston? They couldn't stop the run. They're the worst against the run. Second worst? Third worst, it might be the Packers. They're, statistically, they struggle against the run. So I think that will be the key to try to jumpstart the offense, is get back to what they weren't able to do last week. And part of it is the Broncos' defense is a really good defense. That's a top 10 D.
Well,
Green Bay is not. But you can run the ball on Green Bay, and you have to run the ball against Green Bay. Who knows what kind of weather you're going to get, too?
You
could get a nasty day up there, as you know. You've been firsthand.
Yes. But do we believe that the offense, well, that the run game can do enough to open up the offense? Because even with Derek's 200 and whatever yards, and I know Malik Willis was the quarterback, I get it.
Yep.
It still didn't open much of the passing game.
Right, but that was Malik Willis' first start. I mean,
and
it's going to be way different with Ryan Tannehill. They threw the ball to win on Sunday. They threw
but
for 255.
Had no option, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
Derek Henry couldn't get
anything
moving.
But
even
when they're running the ball well, the passing game still hasn't been consistent.
No.
Even when they've had good running days, the passing game hasn't held up their end of the bargain. It's been, we're running the ball really well, and the offense is, the passing game is, but you know what? The defense is playing their ass off, and that's what's going to win us the game. Running the football and the defense. If for some reason the offense just never on a consistent basis pick up their slack.
They picked up the slack last week. I'm telling you, you're 6-3. I'm okay. I'm feeling good.
The slack from the standpoint of making two plays in the game.
That's right.
And that's all they needed.
Absolutely.
That is all they needed versus the Denver Broncos, was two plays and two touchdowns. Because essentially that's what it was.
Right.
Two plays, two touchdowns.
Well, they got the one big play. Big plays are huge in the league. That's the emphasis of so many defenses right now. Do not give up the explosive play. They got one of those. And then the other thing that this offense has done well, they haven't gotten down there very much.
Red zone.
But when they get to the red zone, they've done really well at getting the touchdown. That touchdown at the end of the half, I cannot tell you how big that was.
Clip right now, I believe, and they are right at the league record, right at it or close to it, the league record in regards to red zone percentages scored. They're
right.
they're from a historical standpoint, they're up there.
It's up there, but yeah, they don't have quite as many at-bats.
Exactly, absolutely.
Like, they barely have enough at-bats to qualify for the batting title in baseball.
And, you know, to Willie's point, that's the difficult dichotomy for Titans fans. Yeah. Hey, you're 6-3, but how good do you feel about this Titans offense being able to carry you through the rest of the season, and are they missing one key playmaker? That's what Stillman and Company will get into coming up next. Chase Willie, D-Mays, Caroline Fenton in for Chase McCabe. Stillman and Company is up next.
We out.